brought to you by ConcordiaTheology.org, bringing you resources that support the vigorous life of the mind in service of the gospel of Christ.
Welcome to Lectionary Kickstart. We're sparking your thoughts for Sunday as you plan your sermon or teaching lesson. I'm your host, Jessica Bordelot, with Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker. They're both professors of homiletics here at Concordia Seminary, St. Louis. You can hear all about us on our website in our introductory episode, but trust me, they're pretty good preachers. All right, let's get started. David, where are we in the church year?
We are at Pentecost.
Still? I thought we were in Pentecost. Last week and the week before.
So
this is
season.
The 12th Sunday, right? 12th. And this is the time of the year when the church celebrates the Holy Spirit and growth among God's people.
And Peter, what are the texts for today?
The texts for this week are Isaiah 56, selected verses from Romans 11 and Matthew 15.
All right. So as usual, each of you share what you would write a sermon on if you had these texts. You never know who I'm going to pick first, and today it's Peter. Which text would you preach on and tell me about it?
All right. I was looking this week at Isaiah 56, and so I want to start by just saying a few things about the verses. Every time when I look at the lectionary readings, I always find it a little strange when we chop up the verses. So I'm looking at Isaiah 56. I want to pay attention to what's going on in the first 8 verses without losing any of it. Jessica, would you start by reading Isaiah 56, verse 8?
The Lord God who gathers the outcast of Israel declares, I will gather yet others to him besides those already gathered.
All right. The gathering, I think, is what caught my attention when I first read this text, that God is one who gathers. And he gathers, verse 8, he gathers the outcast of Israel, and he will gather yet others. Besides those already gathered. And so I was thinking about the gathering that God does. And that, of course, like we talked about, there's four or five verses that were chopped out of this text. And those verses focus on kind of the theme of God gathering unlikely people. And so verse 4 especially talks about the eunuchs who keep my Sabbaths, who choose the things that please me and hold fast to my covenant. There's this movement in Isaiah 56 where you've got God gathering people that you wouldn't expect God to gather.
Right, and that's why to me it was ironic that mm-hmm. they cut out. I mean, so you know, you're talking about God gathering the marginalized, right?
Right.
So let's cut out the marginalized.
Right.
Right. It's just ironic. You know, from a human standpoint, there's always people we overlook, unfortunately.
Right.
But God still has them in mind, even though they're not read, even mm-hmm. though they're cut out of the reading. They're still there in the mind of God, and he's going to care for them.
Yeah, which is interesting. I don't recommend kind of preaching on the way that the lectionary is divided up. That's kind of too much behind the scenes for a sermon. But it does speak to our tendency to not even mention sometimes things that are hard to mention.
Right.
I can imagine being a pastor and not wanting to read the stuff about the eunuch and having the children wondering what is that. And
right.
You don't want to get into that into a sermon. That's more for Bible class. But just our tendency to marginalize even mm-hmm. the marginalized mm-hmm. in this text yeah. is worth at least contemplating as a pastor.
As a parishioner, though, let me say, do put it in the Bible study, because I may only ever hear the verses that are read in the lectionary. I think maybe most Christians would only hear those, because every Sunday they're read to you, they're fed right to you, you don't need to go searching after them. It's there for a reason. Talk about it in Bible study so I can still learn about it. Otherwise, I might just read it and wonder or never hear it at all.
Right. I think that's really the way to do it, because you do want to address these things, partially because they're right there in the text, but also because this is a word that I think the church really needs to hear
today.
Well,
it's comforting. Yeah.
It's comforting, and it's what I like about this text and what drew me to it was it shows the character of God,
mm-hmm.
I think, by talking about God's actions in relation to all sorts of people.
Mm-hmm.
You get a glimpse of his character. And his character in this text, and that's why I wanted to start with verse 8, is a God who gathers. He joins people to himself. He gathers them on his holy mountain and his house of prayer. And so I want to think about this sermon as a sermon where you address and reflect on and proclaim the nature of God as one who gathers. Mm-hmm. And so I've got kind of some ways you could define. So the logic of definition could be helpful here, maybe. Well, first of all, who does God gather?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And in this text, he gathers even just the language that we have, the outcasts, the foreigners.
Foreigners, right.
Yet others.
And so people who may not naturally be together, right?
Right.
So you've got, yeah, I mean, you think about, you know, you're gathering together oil and vinegar. These are not going to mix well, but God's going to gather them anyway, right? And you think about his disciples. Jesus calls the disciples. He's got a zealot and he's got mm-hmm. a tax gatherer.
Right.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
who could think of two people who would probably fight more than that, right?
Right.
So you've got...
And two brothers. They fight a lot.
Right, yeah. They're two brothers. Sons of thunder. That's right. Yeah. So you've got God gathering, and, you know, and you know, we kind of have a way of creating our own communities on social media,
mm-hmm.
and so we're excluding rather than gathering. And here, he's gathering people that you might otherwise exclude. And so you go to church, and you're like, "Well, how did they get here?" Right? Well, same way you did, God.
Right. Well, I think what you described, David, is kind of the word that people. It's kind of a trendy word. Is we're kind of a tribalistic people. We gather with our tribes,
mm-hmm.
and we get it starts online, or maybe it doesn't start online, but it happens online. You gather with people who are like you. It happens at church. You gather with people who are like you. It certainly happens in our friend groups and that kind of thing. But this is a contrast that we have with God, where God gathers people who are unlike each other. And so, this is of course a theme in Isaiah that sometimes we think about the Old Testament as only a place where God concerns himself with Israel, his chosen people. But you have kind of peppered throughout the prophets this language of gathering others
mm-hmm.
and foreigners and the ones who in Israel who are unlikely. And so even back a couple chapters earlier in chapter 55, verse 5, the prophet talks about gathering the nations. And so you do have this theme that God chooses Israel for the sake of blessing all people. And so this is just a text that gets really into the who are the others, the outcasts, the foreigners, the eunuchs.
I mean, the way if I remember, because they have that line there, Jessica, could you read verse 7 again?
These I will bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer. Their burnt offerings and their sacrifices will be accepted on my altar. For my house shall be called a house of prayer for all peoples.
And that line is the line where Jesus cleans out the temple, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've
right.
made it, you know, you've made it a den of thieves and robbers. It's supposed to be. So even, like you said, you know, you often think of the Old Testament, it's only for the Jews. And yet there was already a recognition that this was for all peoples.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So there's a beautiful seed that's there that we're just going to have to watch and await for it to blossom. But it was there from the very beginning. It's not like God changed his mind suddenly and said, oh, I think I'll bring them in too.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So one question to ask is, well, who is God going to gather? And that's where you get the all nations, the foreigners and everybody. Where is he going to gather them? And you've got a couple different cues you could take in this text. And I kind of, maybe you'd want to kind of choose one or the other, but you've got the holy mountain and you've got the house of prayer. And so, of course, you know, the temple could be, mm-hmm. you know, described in both ways. You're thinking about with the mountain, at least, all the way back to Isaiah chapter 2, where the prophet talks about gathering all people on his holy mountain, that beautiful first, I don't know, five or six verses of Isaiah chapter 2. Where this idea of the holy mountain, the place where God gathers his people.
And then later in Isaiah, there's a big feast on that holy mountain, right?
Right?
And all tears will be wiped away. And
right. So
yeah,
you've got, I mean, you could just go with the mountain theme and not,
right.
I mean, I think you kind of want to, you want to think about the temple as a place where God's gathering people and a house of prayer and, you know, the connection to Jesus in the temple. But also sometimes that image of a mountain, without narrowing it so specifically to a building, can be kind of a helpful, just noticing that theme throughout Isaiah.
I remember you talking about that when we talked about the woman at the well, and she said, some people say we worship here, some say in the temple, which is it? And Jesus' answer was inclusive of both. That reminds me of what you said about that.
Yeah, it's, you know, and that's where the fulfillment of this is, where is it? Well, it's in Jesus, and gathers where. I mean, today we'd say where his word is proclaimed. And
yeah.
So you've got the who, you've got the where, and you've got the kind of what kind of gathering is this? What kind of people? And that's where I was just focused on verse 7. Would you read just the first half of verse 7, Jessica?
These I bring to my holy mountain and make them joyful in my house of prayer.
Make them joyful. The place of joy in the Christian community, in the gathering. There's so much lack of joy in our world and in our lives. And this image of this gathering at the mountain of the Lord, and these people are made joyful. And so you get songs of praise and gratitude, and this image of joy, of the way things should be. And so I think you could use this text to think about the character of God by who he gathers, where he gathers them, and how he gathers them, or how he gathers them to be. And I think that would be a nice way to then proclaim Jesus as the one who blows this open. You mm-hmm. know, you talked about the blossoming seed. The mm-hmm. seed is there in the Old Testament.
Right.
And Jesus, and the New Testament reading, the Matthew passage, gets specifically to this.
The Canaanite woman. Right, yeah.
And so you see that, a specific instance of that. So I think, of course, anytime you proclaim the gospel from the Old Testament, you got to make sure you're preaching Jesus.
Right.
And so how you get Jesus into this text, I think the Matthew reading would be one way to do it. So I think that's what I'm going to go with this week, Isaiah 56, and think of the character of God and who and where and how he gathers his people.
Now, and you've got that passage in John, right, where Jesus says that he'll draw all people to himself, right, mm-hmm. when he's lifted up. So you've mm-hmm. got that gathering imagery happens.
All right, so you would do Isaiah. David, now you told me last week you would do Romans 11 because
no,
you skipped
I didn't.
It. No,
oh,
you said
oh,
all was great in Romans 8.
Yeah,
and it was gonna,
I know.
You,
I know, and it's good again in Romans 11. Yeah,
right? Oh, no.
No, I'm going to go with the gospel. I love this reading of the Canaanite woman.
Yeah,
I just
me too.
No matter which one is writing it, I love it. What do you love about it?
I love it that she claims God's promises.
Yeah.
You know, where Jesus is like, you know, he said, I'm not going to give food to the puppies instead of to you. And she's like, yeah, but.
But, right.
And you think of the other Old Testament characters that did that, like Moses, don't destroy the people, destroy me instead.
Right.
Yeah. Or Jacob was like, I'm not going to let you go till you bless me. And she's doing the same
thing. Oh, yeah, she's so persistent.
Yeah.
And holding on. You know, you're looking at the lectionary readings, and if you follow the sequence from Matthew, you don't get what happens immediately before and what happens immediately after. And I think if you look at what happens immediately before and what happens immediately after, this even becomes more beautiful. Because right before this, Jesus is having an argument with the Pharisees about laws of cleanliness, and why are your disciples eating without washing their hands and, you know, making things unclean. And then mm-hmm. Jesus says, you know, it's not what goes into the body that makes you unclean. It's what comes out of the heart that makes you unclean. And so there's this argument happening among the Jewish people to whom Jesus came to save, right? So they're arguing. So that then sets you up for this text because, Jessica, could you read verse 21, the very beginning?
And Jesus went away from there and withdrew to the district of Tyre and Sidon.
Okay, so two things. He went away from there, which is also like from those people.
Right.
So he's walking away from a place where there's a huge argument, mm-hmm. and an argument about cleanliness, and there's fights that are happening regarding Jesus and his ministry and his disciples. And so Jesus goes away from there, but notice it doesn't say, and he journeys out to, or he, you know, he launches a new mission into. Instead, he withdraws. He's like withdrawing from his ministry in Israel, and he's kind of going up to Tyre and Sidon, right? And so you've got Jesus moving away from argument. And then after this, you have the feeding of the 4,000. So we had the feeding of the 5,000 among the Jewish people. Now you have the feeding of the 4,000 among the Gentiles. And so you're going to move from argument to abundance. And it all kind of hovers around the language of food and eating and cleanliness, right? And so when Jesus says to the woman that, you know, I'm not going to, you know, I'm sent for the children of Israel, and she then, you know, says, Lord, help me, what is his answer and her response? Could you read verse 26 and 27?
And he answered, it is not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. She said, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table.
Okay, so this imagery of eating is kind of linking the narrative arc from moving from a place of argument and bitterness. I just see very small-minded people fighting with one another, and Jesus just kind of goes away from there and withdraws. So you withdraw from that type of a place, and you're going to end up at a place where there is an abundance of food, 4,000 people being fed. And right in the middle, you have one little crumb. That's all the woman wants is one crumb. And so you're going to move from argument through a crumb to abundance. And it's just this, I mean, what I think is so beautiful for me, at least, is she, you know, she's like, you know, I'll eat a crumb, Lord. But when you think about what the crumb actually is, the crumb is causing a demon to depart from her daughter. If that's a crumb in God's kingdom, what kind of a kingdom does Jesus have, right?
Oh,
I mean,
lavish.
You know, what kind of rule does he have if if just taking away a demon is seen as a crumb that's given to a dog? It's just, I just, there's so much in the text here, in the vision, the grand vision.
Well, and that faith of the woman, you know, Jesus says, how great is your faith? The recognition who Jesus is. If they're arguing about how confused everyone is about Jesus in the preceding part, then this woman who is simply seeking help,
right,
and trusts that Jesus can help.
Well, and I like the way her plea, you know, the opening plea to Jesus. She's crying out, have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David, my daughter is possessed by a demon. So you're getting everything. You're getting, you know, Lord, Son of David, and a Canaanite coming to the one that she sees as the Son of David, and her daughter's ill. But then when Jesus, you know, doesn't respond, the disciples say, send her away, then her plea is really, really short. If you could read what she says in verse 25.
But she came and knelt before him, saying, Lord, help me.
I just love that. I mean, so much is in that very, very small plea. Lord, help me, right? I mean, you know, I say it all the time.
Right.
Lord, help me, right? You know, it's just kind of, you know, so she's got this long confession that's starting out, you know, what's the situation? And then it's like when push comes to shove, just help me.
Right.
Lord, help me.
Right.
And that's when Jesus then resists and she kind of accepts the position as a dog in his kingdom. Why? Because a crumb in that kingdom is the exorcism of a demon. I mean, it's just amazing.
So. Yeah, immediately when you said the brevity of her second response, I think of Peter when he stepped out in the water, Lord, save me.
Right.
Just
yeah.
When things get to a certain point where you have you don't need to get all flowery in your prayers.
No.
You just beg for help.
Right. This is the point where you just lay out exactly what it is, right?
Right.
Yeah. So you know, when I was thinking, it's kind of, this has nothing to do with the text, but it's kind of in my mind. I was playing pickleball this weekend, okay?
Okay.
And
I hope you didn't get injured.
Well, this is the point. Yes. So we're playing pickleball. There's a lot of people on the courts, and the group I was in playing, they were having some stupid argument about, you know, somebody stepped over into the kitchen and blah, blah, blah. And so there's all this argument going on, right? And a woman falls into the net a few courts away from us and hurts her back. And immediately, everything was transformed. Suddenly, one of the guys on her team, he calls 911. A woman on her team ran, and she had an ice pack in her car. I went out to the street because, you know, we're in the middle of a park, and I want to guide the emergency response team to this thing. And it was like everything was just completely transformed. And you had everybody focused on helping this woman. And then after they took her off the court, we gathered back to play. And somebody's like, what was the score? What were we arguing about? We're like, doesn't matter. Let's just start up. Right? And it's like, I see that. Something like that I see happening in this text. I mean, I know it's a real bad analogy.
Man, but you think about the things we argue about.
I know.
Even as congregations.
Yeah.
And, you know, the things that our recognition and our pleas for help sometimes can relativize the things
yes.
that we fight about.
Right. So you have this huge fight in the voters' meeting about what color the ornaments on the Christmas tree are going to be mm-hmm. or something just inane like that, right? And then all of the sudden, you know, there's a family whose child gets sick and the church transforms.
Right.
And it moves from a place of argument to a place of abundance, abundance of love and care just pouring out to the point where you kind of return to the argument. You're like, who cares what color's on the Christmas tree, right? That's the beauty of it, I think. So when you look at the text in a larger frame and you see where Jesus is coming from and where they're going, and right in the middle is this very small moment of a outsider's need, and that kind of thing brings you from argument to abundance, that would be.
Yeah, so you've got the broader context, and then you've got the zeroing in on this very intimate personal exchange between Jesus and this needy, helpy outcast. I mean, that's the connection
right.
to the,
right. the,
to
Old,
the
Testament.
Old Testament,
yeah.
this foreigner that comes to Jesus with this deep need. To me, it caught my attention that multiple times she says, help me, have mercy on me. It's her daughter.
And
it's
her
problem.
Daughter, right. Yeah.
And so even this woman who's coming to God, she's coming to Jesus on behalf of
someone else,
her daughter.
Right.
And that's kind of a beautiful, the act of faith there is not just, I mean, this mom, maybe it's easy because it's a mom and a daughter, but she's identifying the need of another as her own need.
Right.
And that's kind of the attitude that we have for each other, or we should at least.
Yeah.
I think a question that your listeners might have when they hear this text is, why is Jesus calling someone a dog? Because that sounds pretty awful that a woman would come to him and say, help me. And he'd be like, what? You're just a dog. You don't deserve this.
Right. I mean, so Luther sees it as him testing her. If I remember in his sermon, he sees it as him testing her and drawing out this beautiful confession of faith by testing her. But there really isn't any reference in there as to why he says it.
I want to do just a little bit of reading and a commentary or two about, because is it just kind of a comparison, kind of the dog and the crumbs and the table, or is there really loaded kind of cultural baggage into the term dog like there would be in our culture? And so I love the beauty of the arc that you described
yeah.
and
yeah.
that movement. And I would maybe you need to acknowledge it because it's a little offensive to our ears.
Yeah, sitting in the pew, I would definitely want you to explain that to me. And then maybe say, and in Bible study, we'll talk about it even more. And then
go.
I would go to Bible study because
yeah,
I want
right.
to know what it means. I want to know.
Well, that's really helpful, Jessica, because you know, you've got your pulse much better on the finger of people who listen and the questions they have. And at the very least, a preacher should acknowledge that's a question for some people and maybe point toward adult Bible class or something like that. But I wouldn't want it to overpower the beauty of this intimate exchange.
That's all for today. We have free resources to guide your next step in planning at concordiatheology.org. You can find more episodes of this show on Spotify, Google, Apple. If you'd like to see the show continue, please subscribe, share, leave a review. I'm your host and producer, Jessica Bordolo. Join us next week here at Lectionary Kickstart when Dr. David Schmidt and Dr. Peter Nafsker spark your thoughts for next Sunday.
I always find it a little strange when we chop up the verses.
Oh, yeah.
And
then you find out what they chopped out.
You find out what they chopped out. But
I didn't even think of that. That's awful.
Yeah.
Yes.